So far in our Search for Intimacy series, we've looked at what sex is and what it's not. We've explored how powerful it is and how if we take it out of its boundaries, it can actually be quite damaging if we misuse it. We've learned some key principles of human sexuality, the value of people, and how sex is not an ordinary thing. It's actually a really holy, special, sacred, divine kind of thing. It's a gift to us. Tonight we're going to look at virginity, dating, and courtship because Dr. Alan Meyer, who's our guide through all of this, who's written the course, The Search for Intimacy, he actually thinks that our Western style of dating is actually fundamentally flawed, which is a fascinating thing to explore. Alan, welcome again.
Thank you. Nice to be with you again.
When we talk about virginity, we normally say, okay, a virgin is somebody who has not had sex. It's actually a much bigger idea than that, isn't it, when you take it from the biblical perspective?
Yes, it is. Although, let's start at the basic premise that we are talking about people guarding their sexuality in such a way that they just reserve sexual intercourse for marriage. It goes to the core of what we were talking about in the first session, the power and the purpose of sex. Because sex is not just a biochemical and physical relationship, because our sexuality is created in us out of the pattern of God's own divine nature, who is a God of intimacy. Sex was designed to change you. When you think about it, marriage is an extraordinary concept. You take a man and a woman who are very different people coming from different households and often very different backgrounds, and somehow they've got to try to make a relationship that can last for a lifetime. Our society is becoming increasingly pessimistic about the sanity of that idea. And part of it is because some of the mechanisms designed to help that to happen are being mistreated. Sex is designed to help a man and a woman be stuck together for life. Fact is, as I mentioned in another program, my entire sexual experience has been with the woman that I'm married to. We've been married now for 41 years, and the concept of divorce to us would be just unthinkable. And it's not that we're perfect people or that we're the perfect couple. It's just that we've stuck ourselves together. And the thought of trying to do life apart from one another is unthinkable. Now, we've contemplated murder on one or two occasions.
But never divorce.
And part of that is because sex was designed to change you. Now, why such an emphasis in the Bible on a thing like virginity? Because, firstly, the power of sex. Sexual intimacy is designed by God to stick a man and a woman together for life. Now, we mentioned this already in one of the earlier programs. Observe the misuse of sex. You can touch a child at the age of 4 or 5. It may not be a painful touch. It may not be a physically destructive touch, but it's a sexualized touch. And 50 years later, the emotional impact of that is still being felt in human life. Why is that so? I believe it's at least in part because sex was designed as a change mechanism. And the Bible reflects on that. It says in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, the Bible puts sex and sexual immorality in a class of its own. Nothing will impact you like this will impact you. And I guess the way in which I became aware of this was as a result of counseling the very first person that ever showed up in my office when I was a youth counselor. And this was a girl who'd led a guy to know Jesus, and he was attending her church, and they were preparing to get married, and they'd got involved in premarital sex. She would have liked to have been a virgin, but he kept putting the pressure on her and moving the goalposts and crying, you know, if you don't do it, I'll die. And so eventually she gives him access to her body, and now they're having sexual intercourse. But she's thinking to herself, well, you know, we're going to be married soon, and then it'll all be okay. However, he dropped her, went off and married somebody else. So now she's the first person I ever counseled, and I talked to her about forgiveness, and she was very grateful for that. But she kept coming back and saying this to me, I don't seem to be able to let go. And after many sessions with her, I realized something has happened inside this girl that's beyond just emotions. In fact, this was an adult version of the child who's been sexually touched and feels the impact of that. Sex was designed by God so that a young man and a young woman would know their first sexual experience at each other's hands. And in the beauty of their, put it in inverted commas, their honeymoon sexual experience, they would find a delight and a world of intimate joy-filled connections that would begin the gluing process that would not only bring healing to their bodies, to their relationships. Sex is such a healing thing. It's such a wonderful expression of forgiveness for the imperfections of other people's lives. It's such an affirming, kind, and you could call it a ministry-based expression of life, caring for another human being.
So virginity is really there to protect us, really, from those negative consequences.
Exactly, so that that you don't find yourself with fingerprints or impressions in your innermost being from a bunch of other people trying to build a one-on-one relationship with someone that actually lasts for life. So when the Bible is so protective as a result of virginity, it's not because God is anti-sex. It's not because God is anti-pleasure. It's because he's pro the longevity of a wonderful, loving relationship. And virginity plays its part in that, in providing a clean slate, an unmarked canvas on which to build a loving relationship with another human being. The word virgin in the Bible means one who is separated, one who's not on the market. And it's such an important concept to realize I'm not on the market. I live in a sense with the spirit of a virgin because I have committed myself to one woman and I'm off the market. I never look at another woman in this life with the idea that somehow this could come to something. It can't. I'm off the market. So I live with this sense I'm separated to the girl that I'm committed to. And single people need to live with this sense that there's someone coming. God has a brilliant plan for my life. And that plan includes a person who's not a perfect person. You know, there's no perfect match. There's no perfect people. But there is a wonderful match. And there's someone that would be right for you who sharing life together with you could make the most out of each other's gifts and cause each other to blossom. And virginity simply honors the fact that that person is really worth the honor that you bestow on them to give them a clean canvas and for them to come to you with an open heart and a clean canvas. And together you begin to paint a whole new picture of life.
Nicely put. Alan Myra is with us on Open House tonight. We're continuing our Search for Intimacy series on sexuality, and tonight we're looking at this notion of virginity. It's not just a very simple concept that we keep on hearing about somebody who doesn't have sex, as Alan said. It's much broader than that. It's a person whose life is set apart for that person that's coming in the future, or the person that you're actually married to now. So what do you think has gone wrong with our style of dating then? The typical style where, you know, you might date a number of people before you find the one, holding hands, kissing. Unfortunately for some people it'll be more than that. What do you think is wrong with that? Because you think it's a flawed system.
I do think it's a flawed system because we've failed to appreciate the impact on a person's soul of those kind of what you could call foreplay, holding hands, cuddling, kissing, the issues of arousal, sexual arousal. They are all part of a mechanism that is designed to lead to intercourse and orgasm in such a way that there is no guilt and no regret attached to that, so that orgasm is again another profound sense of being bonded, cared for and committed to another human being. I guess my resistance to this and my concern over this is that I've just watched too many kids' lives unfold. I'll never forget the very first time we had our house open and I watched kids coming in and often just would pair off for a couple of weeks. I watched the damage that that did to other kids. You know, the guy and the girl, they hold hands for 3 weeks and they kiss and they cuddle and treat each other like they're really special. And then the next thing you know, one drops the other. I watched the damage that that did to people. I watched kids leave school over it, over the humiliation. I watched kids leave their faith over that. And I think people are just worth more than that. When you appreciate the fact that there really is a God and he does know your life and he is for you, it takes the fear out of the lifestyle, which means if I don't grab someone now, it's like in musical chairs. As soon as the music stops, everybody fights for a chair because I might miss out.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of that at the back of defective dating practices. And when I talk about defective dating practices, I'm not talking about guys and girls going out together. It's the pairing off thing. It's that premature beginning of the arousal and the treatment of another person as if they're your sexual partner, even if it doesn't lead to full-on intercourse, to treat someone as if they're your sexual partner when you have no idea yet whether you're prepared to stick around mm-hmm. and honour the impact that you're having
and so
on
even,
their life.
Even holding hands and kissing, you actually say, you know, it's all part of that. It's heading down the slope, or heading up the mountain,
if you want to put it that way. It's beginning to build into another human being's heart. And if you tear that apart, you do that half a dozen times, people begin to have, there's a learned response. We have plastic neuronal pathways in our brain which are formed by life experiences. And you keep on forming life experiences that you begin romantic attachments and then they lead to tragedy. You begin another one and it leads to heartache. You bring another one, it leads to another separation. You build neuronal pathways into your brain that lead you to not being capable of making bonded long-term commitments with people.
You know, there'll be people listening to us now who will actually say, I can't even imagine an alternative. I mean, what is an alternative dating pattern if it's not to do just what we've talked about, which is what everybody does?
Well, the alternative to that is to treat people like your brother or your sister until such time as you know that you really are committed. I can go out and have a lot of fun with girls and with guys as long as my attitude toward them is such that I honour the place where the relationship is really up to. I think the Bible has some fascinating advice. It said in one place, a guy called Timothy was instructed by an older man called Paul to treat the younger women like sisters and treat the older women like mothers. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a fantastic piece of advice. I gave that to my own kids. I helped my children to live that out. And so it really is a matter of just treating people with profound dignity. And spending time with people more like brothers and sisters than prospective bed partners. Listen, there's some things you don't do with your sister. Mm. You think that one through. Whatever you can do appropriately with your sister, by all means, go out and do with people on dates. Whatever you think you can do appropriately with your brother, go out and do that on dates. And if you have that kind of a date, there'll be a date in which you actually find out what that person is about, mm-hmm. who they are, what mm-hmm. they think, what they believe. And as that begins to move in a direction which is clearly no longer brother and sister, there are a lot of other questions that need to be asked, and they need to be asked early, not late.
Like?
I think that you've got to look at all of the issues that are involved in harnessing one life to another. Are we intellectually compatible? Do we have social compatibility? Is our view of life compatible? What do we think we're supposed to be doing with the one life we've got? Many questions that are involved before you go putting a yoke mm-hmm. on your, because that's what mm-hmm. marriage is. You yoke yourself to another human being. Mm-hmm. The Bible says don't be unequally yoked, you know. And if you're going to find out if you're unequally yoked, it's not just about do we get the hots for each other. There's a lot of questions yeah. to be answered if you're going to do life well together. Yeah. And so I really encourage young men and women to spend time with the opposite sex. Yeah, go ski, hike, fish, play golf, do all the stuff, but treat each other like brothers and sisters until such time as it becomes very clear that there's something more in my heart for this person. I think I could commit my life to this person. Then you need to include others in the growing commitment to another human mm-hmm. life, and you don't cross the line from brother and sister to boyfriend, girlfriend, fiancé, coming marriage partner until you are really clear that this relationship really does have a future.
So you're really talking about courtship there, aren't you? That old-fashioned sense of courtship.
That's exactly the word that I think is worth recovering. Rediscover what courtship means, because it is spending time thoughtfully, carefully, deliberately with another human being, asking the question, could we build a great life together? Mm. Not just, are we having fun? And man, the colour of your knickers is really exciting to me.